Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the NOLA Drinks Show. Brian Diaz here with you on the unofficial start of the weekend here in the Crescent City. Yes, friends, here on the NOLA Drinks Show, we always help our neighbors, especially if they've offered to help us. And the only Rocky Man that we're interested in naming these days would be probably the Elton John song. Hey, we got a good show coming up for you today, friends. So we're going to talk. We got a few things going on, and we'll talk about that in just a second. I did want to mention right out off the top here, of course, more going on in tropical weather with Hurricane Maria still wreaking havoc in the Caribbean, and obviously causing a significant amount of damage to Puerto Rico, St. Croix, other locations. Hopefully it stays to the east of the Turks and Caicos and Bahamas. But I wanted to mention what I did mention last week was talking about, we've talked a little bit about Hurricane Harvey and some efforts, some aid efforts and things like that you can help out with by donation and things like that. And, well, I mentioned last week that we would talk about some of these things, some of these resources that you can contribute to that are out there to help our neighbors in Florida and elsewhere in the Caribbean with Hurricane Irma. And I'm going to ask for your patience. I will get to that next week. I'm still kind of looking around, but also one of the things that we're going to do on next week's show is we're going to be talking with two or three members of the service industry here in New Orleans, bartenders specifically, and their ongoing aid efforts to help victims of Hurricane Harvey, with a bit of an emphasis on folks in the service industry in the Houston and that part of southeastern Texas. And why it's important, of course, is this is where we get to the period, as we all well know around here, this is the long slog, as I like to say, back to recovery here. And it's easy to kind of jump, throw a bunch of money at things right when it first happens, and then we kind of forget about the trudge that has to go on to get back. So this is where the focus is with these guys right now. As I've talked with some of them, some stuff's going to be going on to help folks with Irma. Certainly, I would think stuff will be going on to help folks with Hurricane Maria. So I figured next week would make a little bit more sense to kind of come back on this, because we're going to be talking with those folks about what they're up to with Hurricane Harvey, and then probably a little bit of a look to the future. We are very good. Our service industry here in New Orleans, of course, are very good, but our service industry folks are very good with helping out others. There's a real sense of doing that, and this is going to be a good effort that's being put on. I believe the event is the end of next week, but you'll get that on next week's show. We'll be sharing that. So thank you for bearing with me on that. We'll get some more of that information. Just wanted to start off with that. What we're going to talk about today then, otherwise, I do actually have one interview that I had not yet run from Tales of the Cocktail. Yes, oh, it keeps rearing its ugly head. There it is, Tales of the Cocktail. This is the last one, I promise. And I've kind of been sitting on this one for a while. It's an interview with a gentleman from Reka Vodka, and we're going to talk with him a little bit about Reka Vodka, which is a very interesting vodka made in Iceland, and that should be a lot of fun. So stay tuned. We're going to do that after we take the break here in a few minutes. We're going to talk with him about that. Then we're going to talk about, I've been on a beer kick lately, friends, so we're going to talk a little bit about beer. If you caught the show last week, I hope you did, or if you're, you know, haven't, please go check it out. We chatted with a certified beer judge, Sal Mortilaro, and a brewmaster of Old Rail Brewing Company up in Old Mandeville, Matt Horney, who's also a certified beer judge, by the way. And I have these guys on now on a regular basis talking about beer periodically, and we were meant to talk about seasonal beers, fall beers, things like that, but this dovetailed into a much broader, and I think more interesting conversation. We talked about water, we talked about hops, we talked about malt, we talked about balance, we talked about all kinds of interesting things in a pretty good amount of detail. So there were a couple other topics that I wanted to get to as it relates to beer, specifically a little bit of news about beer, and then also talking about, you know, we talked a lot about water on the show last week, and there's a story I'll tell you, a recent incident that occurred, but talking about the need to clean beer lines. This may sound pretty boring, but it's a lot of work, and it needs to happen to make sure the quality of the beer is there. So we're going to talk about that. We might even touch on how some of this relates to wine a little bit if we get that far. Not sure we're going to make it there today. Then we're going to chat with our good friend Adrian Miller, and Adrian's a good pal of mine, and she and I are embarking. If you caught the show, this was probably about 2 months ago. This will start hatching. We did a show where we were eating some Mexican food, sitting at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. And we were talking about this food tour that we're going to do. And what we're going to start doing, we explain this, it kind of even really develops in the conversation I have with Adrian over those segments, but it's we're calling it the Two Dummies Food Tour, because my good pal Adrian is one of the probably the only person I know that wields the word lovingly dummy frequently. I've been called a dummy by her for about the past 3 years. And so it seemed to fit. We're going to call it the Two Dummies Food Tour. We're going to do a lot of stuff around the New Orleans area. Of course, we might even venture down the road further afield. And some of what we want to do is, yeah, we're going to probably talk about some things that you might know, might expect, kind of maybe obvious, especially if you're listening to the show outside of New Orleans, things that you might associate food with and drink, of course, in the New Orleans area. But then there's also a lot of things, I think, on a couple fronts, things that people may associate with New Orleans, but are actually not from New Orleans directly, have been brought here. So like Cajun food, for example, I think is a good example where they're not really synonymous necessarily. There's, of course, a relationship. It exists in New Orleans, but they're two different things, essentially. So some things like that. And then we're also going to talk a little bit about certain things that we just don't get here very much of, like certain ethnic foods and other things, and kind of turn over things that maybe you don't expect as much to hear about when we talk about the famous culinary city that it is, and it rightfully should be. But there you go. So we're going to, you know, just kind of do stuff and go out and eat. That's what we're really going to do here on the Two Dummies Food Tour. And yeah, we're going to do that. And I'll talk to her a little bit, and then we're going to close out the show. So we're going to take a little break here on the show, a quick little opening segment, because it's a little bit of a longer interview with Reka Vodka. Stay tuned for that. And then we're going to come back. We're going to talk about beer, as I said, and then our interview with Adrian Miller and our Two Dummies Food Tour. So thanks for tuning into the show. If you're listening on WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans, or if you're listening in podcast land, wherever you may be, I appreciate it. We're going to take a little break. Come on back.
Hey, ladies. Are you looking for wine to bring to your next girls' night out? Grab a bottle of Capitello Wines and enjoy the taste of fruit from Oregon's Willamette Valley. Capitello has a wide variety of wines to choose from. Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, dessert wine, and a Brut Sparkling that's a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He'll even stop by next time he's in town. So grab the girls, have fun, and enjoy Capitello Wine. Cheers.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special two-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair it with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu, life is meant to be lived, not endured.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickey Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickey Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim Magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickey Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickey Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Nola Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Hey, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in the podcast interwebs, wherever you are. Pleased to be joined by Trevor Schneider. We were just having a good laugh, a little side note. We're going to leave it at that. And Trevor, man, welcome to the show, dude.
Thank you very much, Brian. I'm very honored to be here.
Absolutely. It's always funny to program a show here during Tales of the Cocktail, because we're in a bit of a rush, and there are those of us who, how shall I say, facilitate the programming of the show.
Sure.
And we work as we do, so here we are.
Here we are. You said it best. I won't even try to rephrase.
Awesome, man. I appreciate you making time, man. So tell me a little bit about yourself, man. You're from New Jersey, you said originally.
Yeah, I'm originally from Jersey. Basically got into the cocktail world along the lines of the entertainment world in New York. I needed a job. And television and film. I was looking to get into some acting.
Oh, okay.
And then that obviously pushed me into the hospitality world as well. So with that being said, here I am sitting almost, you know, a dozen years later in front of you, representing a beautiful brand for a very family-driven company.
How did you get involved in the alcohol business, Trevor?
So with that being said, with the entertainment, right, I just needed to make some money while I was auditioning. And then I had a friend who was working the door at a bar. And next thing you know, he said, hey, man, you need to make some money. I said, yes, I do. Who doesn't need to make money? I live in New York.
Rent.
Right. Rent. It's like rent times two. So then I got behind the bar. And I remember the first shift, you know, I didn't have much training. And the guy said, so what do you know? I said, I barely know how to pour a glass of wine. And, I actually learned a lot, and I utilized a lot of my skills that I learned from acting in the bar being a stage and a performance.
Absolutely. People want to connect that way, don't they?
I have to connect, man. And it's all about serving, serve the people. Don't serve just cocktails.
Absolutely. You can do that at home, right?
Yes, you can.
You can do that at home. You can buy, conversations with it, anyway, that don't want to get too far off on this tangent. You can buy damn near anything and have it at home.
Yes.
So it's a cultural experience. It's an interaction experience.
Yeah, people want to go out, right, to be entertained. So there's an extra element or an ingredient that then doesn't actually go into the cocktail or the glass, whether you're drinking a whiskey or you're drinking a cocktail. It's about that hospitality. It's the second oldest profession next to prostitution.
Yeah, absolutely. There's two or three in there, but that's at least like in the top three or four, yeah, right, without a doubt.
Right.
So now, tell me, how did you connect with Reka, man?
So Reka and I kind of fell in love through a couple different, I'll tell you the short version, but more or less I had been looking for an ambassador position for quite some time. The body was kind of feeling a little beat up from all the cocktails that I slang in New York. And a good
that
friend of mine.
That is a good past tense of that verb that you just used, man. I'm impressed with
slang.
That.
Slang. Thank you very much, Brian.
I like that conjugation. That was sweet. Go on, man.
So, basically, a friend of a friend said, hey, they're looking for a national ambassador for Reka Vodka. If you know anybody, pass their names along. That friend was Tim Cooper. And that other friend, the guy that worked for William Grant Sons, was a man by the name of Jim Ryan, who used to be the national ambassador for Hendrick's Gin for a very long time, and only recently just left. So we did that whole resume thing. He said, what are you thinking? And I said, hey, man, I'm ready to make the commitment and jump over to the corporate side and get out from behind the bar and really, kind of engage with people on a different level and experience whatever this corporate world with liquor is, that I dealt with those people, right, from behind the bar. But I then was thinking about being one of those people. And again, like I've reiterated many times when being interviewed, is that my entertainment background, right, on film and on stage and pursuing stuff like that in independent films made me obviously very comfortable to talk and tell stories and entertain and host people. So,
and then with your time behind the stick, and then this, did the connection with actually alcohol. I mean, it's kind of an obvious story, but got to be a passion there, right? So
the passion for me, right, the connection with the alcohol is completely linked, or the underlying thing is all about the hospitality, right? Booze is great, and it's, I would like to say, maybe the one of the ingredients that pulls us all together. But for me, I'm really infatuated with the idea of hosting people and making them have an amazing experience. So with that being said, I wanted to work for a company that took pride in that, right? And William Grant & Sons has been distilling spirits for 130 years, and they're a family-owned company. So very much different than a few other suppliers.
We don't need to name names.
We do not.
Who is now married to who?
They shall go unnamed, Brian.
There's a verb conjugation in there somewhere.
I was going to say, there's a Harry Potter saying in there somewhere as well, but we'll leave that lie. So I was very proud to have the opportunity to not only work with William Grant & Sons, but to work on a brand that really takes a lot of pride in the quality of the spirit and then has a tremendous amount of science behind it as well. I'm a little bit of a geek. For all you listeners out there, I wear glasses.
Yeah, you do, and you could actually have a face for other things. I have a face for radio, and we're gonna leave that old joke.
You're very kind, Brian.
And voice for print. Oh man, I'm gonna go down that road. Anyway, so yeah, cool. So I mean, yeah, people that take it seriously.
Sure. Right?
And tell us a little bit about Reka, then, man.
So Reka is the first Icelandic vodka and one of the only ones here in the United States. Big kind of secret is it's been around for quite some time. It came out around the same time that Hendrick's Gin came out, but then got backburnered because William Grant & Sons used to work with a vodka that shall not be named.
So just backing up a little bit here. So with Reka, an original distillery in Iceland.
Yep. In a small fishing village called Borgarnes.
Okay. And going back how long?
2005 was the first distillation through the still.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So that's about 12 years. So first Icelandic vodka, for one of the only ones here in the United States, taking a lot of pride in science, as I said. So we use a geothermal process for our distilling. So we leave no carbon footprint in that process. Iceland is covered with more than 200 volcanoes, of which 30 of them are active.
Right.
So they utilize that not only just for our distillation, but as a country, they are almost sustainable to 80% of that major main power source being geothermal energy.
All the produce going into it's going to be grown on volcanic soil? So, right? Is everything from Iceland?
It's not. So okay. Our grains and everything come from mainland or Scotland.
Right. Oh, okay.
Because Iceland is really not a suitable place for the growing environment, especially not at the volumes that we're starting to get at. So we use some of the best and cleanest and purest Arctic spring water or glacial water.
You have that in Iceland.
Yes, we have tons of that, right? And, well, I mean, with global warming, it's getting smaller and smaller, but yes, we do have quite a bit. It's not going to run out anytime.
Back on the show, we'll talk about that.
Right.
Yeah, we do.
So obviously, we're talking about vodka, right? So it makes up about 60% of the final product. We have some of the best water in the world. It's the only place in the world that Coca-Cola doesn't filter their water for fountain drinks.
That's very interesting.
That's very interesting, mm-hmm. right? So we utilize lava rock. So it's kind of twofold with the volcanoes, right? Not only do they give us power to distill our spirit, but they also give us this beautiful lava rock, which we use as our filtration mechanism. It's a natural, effective, efficient way to remove impurities. And as I said, there are still more than 30 active volcanoes in Iceland. So Arctic spring water, lava rock filtration, geothermal energy were made in a small batch, which is very unique to the category, distilled in a Carterhead still, which was originally created for gin, predominantly made with copper to produce unparalleled clarity and cleanliness of a spirit. And then in those small batches, it's 1,000 liters or 255 cases at a time, which is, again, very unique.
Very small production.
Very small, very small.
Very interesting.
And we get about like two distillations a day. And the master distiller's name is Thordor. He's also, and listen up, ladies and gentlemen, he's also a policeman, a fireman, and a father of three, and also the only man that distills our spirit.
I like it.
It's a task.
We'll have to have him on because I like to talk about balance of life. We all talk about balance of life and that being a bit of a struggle. So is this something that is actually not distilled year round then because of balancing said life and other considerations?
So I don't know how he does it, but he does it around the clock.
Okay.
And he does take his time to go out and do his activities and, you know, obviously spend time with his children. But no, it's a, you know, it's a year round process that he does. He definitely takes weekends, as I said, but just to keep it in scope, right? So this small fishing village.
He's got to have somebody who helps out, right? Because if there's a fire, the dude's got to leave.
Right. Yeah, fire or a police situation.
Right.
But what I will say,
or poop situation with a little kid, right?
Right. But what I will say is that there are only about 330,000 people in the entire country. So, you know, it's a smaller kind of a scale.
You can't start too many fires. Yes.
Right. There's not many fires going on in Iceland. Just to be clear, Brian.
That actually makes a lot of sense, really, if you think about it. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah.
Awesome. Beautiful stuff. Very clean. Very nice.
Yep.
And easy drinking vodka, right? Very approachable vodka. Definitely readily available everywhere these days.
Yes. So what I was going to say just about the flavor profile, right?
Please.
It's something that I say this oxymoron thing all the time. It's a vodka flavored vodka, right? What does that mean? Well, I mean, it means a lot of things. But to your point of what you said about tasting it in terms of it being very clean, starts off a little sweet, then moves on to a little bit of citrus.
Floral.
Yeah.
Honeysuckle.
And then and then into maybe a bit of like a peppery or hot, right? And I describe that as like a white pepper.
Yeah.
And then there's a little bit of a round kind of a situation that's happening at the end, you know, kind of getting your palate ready to have the next sip, which is very unique in terms of drinking vodka.
Yeah. That very much is. And actually, one of the things that I do like about this is... I seem to be on this week and tasting different things. The floral note on this is very nice. And when the floral note, the floral note is absent in many things, can be a bit of a problem. And this does show that nice floral lavender honeysuckle note at the end, which I do find
it's really very nice. It's very unique to the category. I know that it's supposed to be colorless, odorless, and flavorless as the category.
Well, we all know that really that's not true.
Exactly.
Right.
But there's, you know... There's that perspective out there, but yes, 100%. A lot of, like, I say the terroir, right? It may be a stretch, but the lava rock really does provide this kind of a tone that is, I'll describe it as so fresh and so clean, right? With the clean water and then it being so fresh. with a distillery being in Iceland and the lava rock and our process and the geothermal energy. It's a good combination.
Trevor, give me an example of a good, because to spirit forward, what would be a good example of a cocktail that we would want to use this in?
So, I mean, my go-to, right, and maybe this is, you know, very simple or a layup, but, you know, the 5-to-1 martini, right? It, okay. Flat out, 5-to-1, Reka, whatever your choice of vermouth is. And then I like a citrus espresso because, you like, as you said, with floral, whether it be an orange, whether it be a lemon, you know, either one of those you can't really lose.
I think I would keep the vermouth dry on this.
Very dry.
Actually, because of that floral.
Or I would just even, you know, go straight up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because there's enough going on in here that you maybe don't want to.
I think if you actually ran it over with a too sweet of a or a viscous vermouth, that you might lose a little bit of the. So going with a dry vermouth, or a touch of like a blanc vermouth with a touch of sweetness would be very nice. But I'm kind of thinking a dry vermouth would actually showcase that floral note in this.
100%. I couldn't agree more.
Awesome. Trevor, tell people where we find Reka online and all that
stuff. So Reka online, we just rolled out a whole new website. It's absolutely gorgeous. For those of you who haven't seen Iceland, there are some beautiful pictures, but it's flat out Reka.com.
Easy enough. R-E-Y-K-A.
100%, yes.
Beautiful. Trevor, dude, thank you so much
for
taking the time.
You're very welcome.
Man, we'll do it again. We'll have you back. We got a little more time here on the Nola Drink Show, and I appreciate it, Trevor, man.
Very nice to meet you, Brian. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Have a good time at Tails here, man.
Thank you. You too.
Yeah. All right. Cheers. Friends, come on back to the Nola Drink Show.
The French Market offers daily entertainment and delicious food and drink options throughout our 6-block district. Whether you crave raw oysters or fresh produce, authentic confections or healthy daiquiris, you can find it here. Sit at one of our cafes and hear live local music. Enjoy a muffuletta, po' boy, salad, or cheese plate in the farmer's market. Check out our pop-up farmer's markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays for even more fresh food options. History is being made fresh daily at the French Market. Visit frenchmarket.org for food, drink, retail, and event listings.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
With the season's beautiful weather, it's a perfect time to take a drive across Lake Pontchartrain and visit New Orleans' only local vineyard and winery, Pontchartrain Vineyards. Our tasting room is open Wednesday through Sunday from noon till 4, or by appointment. Come enjoy a flight of our wines in our classically styled French Provençal tasting room, or pack a picnic lunch and enjoy a bottle of wine on our patio overlooking the vineyard. While you're there, ask about our wine club. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In 2008, the Louisiana legislature made the Sazerac cocktail the official cocktail of New Orleans, affirming what New Orleanians had known for over 150 years. You just can't beat a good Sazerac. The Sazerac cocktail is the quintessential New Orleans drink, perfect for celebrating the arrival of fall festivals, football season, or just being proud to be a New Orleanian. For the official recipe, visit www.sazerac.com.
Hello, this is Ron Bartholomew, and to my great city of New Orleans, I'd like to introduce to you Touch Vodka. This artisan handcrafted ultra-premium vodka is uniquely distilled from Florida's finest wildflower honey and American grain. Touch also produces key lime, Valencia orange, and ruby red grapefruit selections that are infused with natural oils of locally sourced fruit, which results in a unique 80-proof vodka with no sugar added or coloring. Touch is now available at Doranax, Cello's, and the Corporation Grill and Bar, and many other locations across Louisiana. This holiday season, sit back and relax and enjoy Touch Vodka.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. Want a great alternative to Over Oak Chardonnay? Try Yamhill Valley Vineyards Pinot Blanc, a wonderfully balanced white wine from the oldest family estate in McMinnville, Oregon, in the Willamette Valley. It's round and ripe like a Chardonnay, but without the heavy oak and sweetness of big commercial corporate Chardonnays. Yamhill Valley Vineyard Pinot Blanc. A great value under $20. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drinks Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans or in podcast land, wherever you may be. Hey, thanks for tuning into the show today. I really appreciate it. And yes, it's Thursday, September 21st, if you're listening on the radio, and sometime on Friday, the 22nd or thereafter in podcast land. So again, however you listen to the NOLA Drinks Show, I appreciate it. Do check us out on Facebook if you get a chance. NOLA Drinks, you can check us out at noladrinks.com. We're also on Instagram and Twitter, and we're working on Pinterest. Stay tuned for that. We got some news coming up on that front too, what we're going to kind of do with Pinterest. So there you go. I'm sure you're riveted. I mentioned we're going to talk about beer and some of these things coming up. I wanted to touch on a couple things. I would be remiss if I did not. A little bit of news here in the New Orleans restaurant world. A couple pieces of news that I want to share with you. So one is kind of maybe negative. I don't want to speculate, but the very famous restaurant or recently highly noteworthy, I'll say that, restaurant Shaya in Uptown. This is part of the Besh Restaurant Group. It's been a partnership with Alon Shaya, A-L-O-N Shaya, who has been working with Besh since Katrina, just before Katrina, as a matter of fact, and been an integral part of that restaurant group. And they went into partnership to open Shaya, and Alon Shaya was also the executive chef there at Shaya, recently won a Beard Award, some of these things, a lot of recognition really, and then he was also the executive chef at Dominica, a fine restaurant in the CBD, and Pizza Dominica, and basically they're parting ways, and it's a little bit hazy on what is going on exactly, but the two of the chef de cuisine, Zachary Engel, who is the chef de cuisine and actually a rising star chef himself at Shaya, has been promoted to executive chef there, and Michael Wilson, who is now the executive chef of Dominica and Pizza Dominica. And it sounds like there are some rumors that Alon Shaya might be trying to purchase Shaya from the Besh Group. And he mentions a little bit, this is first reported by Brent Anderson with Times-Picayune and NOLA.com. And a little bit there. It seems some conversation about, when they won the Beard Award, there was a little bit of a rumbling that went on because I believe it was Besh himself put something out on, I believe it was Instagram, where it was the hashtag Besh Restaurant Group, and Alon Shaya then responded with hashtag Shaya Restaurant Group. And he makes some reference to building, in recent conversation, he's not really elaborated much about building the quote-unquote Shaya brand. So we'll see what that means exactly. We'll keep you posted on that. Always a bit of drama here in the restaurant world in New Orleans and anywhere, really no exception. We've talked a lot about the restaurant business here, about some of the rough times and things like that going on in the city, also especially the summertime, some things. Check out some of those past shows, some fascinating stuff, conversations with Robert LeBlanc, a restaurateur from the LeBlanc Smith Restaurant Group, for example. So something we always like to keep tabs on here on the show, and we will continue to do so. Also wanted to mention that Kristen Essig and her partner, Michael Stoltzfus, their business partners, life partners. They run Coquette. Michael is the man really opened Coquette. And then Kristen, when she departed from the aforementioned LeBlanc Smith Restaurant Group, she was the executive chef at their restaurants, Cavin and Mobar. And she became a partner at Coquette, which is Uptown, also a very fine restaurant. And they are opening a new place, not a whole lot of detail exactly going on in the Lower Garden District. It's going to be at 1245 Constance Street, and it's an interesting building. I actually walk by it from time to time, and it's it needs a lot of work. It's where Shamrock Tavern used to be. The building's going to need, as I said, a lot of work. One of the cool things about it is that there are a couple old Dixie Beer, which is now, you know, made a comeback kind of coincidentally here in this part of this conversation, murals on the side of the building that kind of catch your attention, and they're pretty neat. And so there is some talk about maybe restoring the Dixie Beer murals. It is, I believe, a historic building, so people in the neighborhood association want to see the building restored, but some of that original character and component, including the Dixie Beer murals, being restored as well. And I think we don't really know what the food plan is. I'm sure Kristen will tell us this sometime sometime down the road, but something is coming, and they don't even have an opening date yet, but stay tuned for that. I'm sure we'll talk about it when it comes up. So a couple of restaurant news things for you. Wanted to mention, now let's move on to beer. And we're talking about beer, like I said, and what are the events going on? And when we close out the show, I'm going to get to some other events at the end here that are happening in town this weekend. But the biggest beer festival that goes on in New Orleans with over 400 beers, it's called NOLA on Tap. It's taking place this Saturday at City Park. And it's, what time does it go? 12 to 7. There's a VIP early entry from 11 to 12. It's going to have all kinds of craft breweries. I believe there's going to be some music and food and all the things that you might expect. It's sponsored by the Bulldog, a good beer pub here in town, and also the Louisiana SPCA. I believe it's a fundraiser for them. It's the largest beer fest in the region. Over 400 beers, as I mentioned, some homebrewed stuff, some locally produced stuff. I think some of the emphasis, the BJCP. See, this is all tied in together. Our good buddy Sal Mortellaro that I was talking about, as well as Matt Horney on last week's show talking about beer. They're both certified judges with the BJCP, which is Beer Judge Certification Program. They're going to be out there. People's Choice Award food. It's dog-friendly art, merchandise vendors, non-beer drinks, and there's going to be games. So you can check that out again this Saturday, September 23rd, 12 to 7, the main entry there. If you go to nolaontap.org, you will find that. So here we go, beer. So one of the things that were, a couple things that have come up lately, also sort of on a sad note, is 40 Arpent, which is a craft brewery in Araby, closed its doors last week. This was first reported by Todd Price at nola.com and the Times-Picayune. And basically that brewery opened up not all that long ago, I believe in 2014, maybe. Yeah. And they closed down. They were over in Old Araby, as I said. And basically, as the story goes, kind of a common refrain is that the landlord, who also had apparently a significant share in the business, decided not to renew the lease. And the gentleman who was the main guy opening it, his name is Naquin, Michael Naquin, I believe it is. Yes. And he has said that he doesn't have the money basically to reopen the operation anywhere. And so unfortunately they have closed down. One of the things that we talk about, of course, with the restaurant business and these other things, I think there's 33 some odd breweries in Southeast Louisiana these days. And yeah, that's a lot. And so I think what happens too, I'm guessing, you know, I don't know this. This is all just speculation. But, you know, if you're making a lot of money and you're really successful, then he could probably have enough money or would have enough money to be able to move the operation somewhere. It's tough. And these windows are really short to be able to establish yourself. And I'll tell you, I've been to a couple breweries recently, small breweries. I'm not going to name them, of course, in the local area. And I wasn't impressed. I don't think their water program was particularly good. Everything kind of tasted the same. It wasn't really well done. I think what happens with a lot of these places, and I'm not saying this is the case with 40 Arpent, let me be entirely clear. But what I am is that I think you have like a lot of home brewers who get involved with opening a brewery. And then what ends up happening is that, and what they do, right? When you're a home brewer, you can often move from beer style to beer style to beer style because you're kind of trying different things and you're making it in smaller batches. And then you think, okay, everybody likes my beer. They tell me my beer is great. I'm going to open a brewery. Well, there's two problems with that. One, if you're kind of doing what I just described, one, moving things up to scale, it's not just simply like multiplying times 10. It doesn't work that way. Sort of like gumbo. It just doesn't really work that way. You've got to know what you're doing to actually scale it up, have the right equipment, all these other considerations, as I mentioned, water program, these sorts of things. And then also, you know, I think what I find with a lot of these people, one particular brewery that we went to very recently in town, you know, said, hey, come back next week or two because we always have new beers. And it kind of got me thinking, it's like, really, perhaps what you need to do is focus on two or three or four or five things that you do really well, and then nail those down, get them right, do them well. And then, you know, mess around with one or two new things. If you do it well, it sticks, or it's seasonal, you bring it back every season because you do it well. But focus on doing that stuff. This is not really something you're doing in your kitchen. And now there are so many breweries in the area and really everywhere that your window to get these things right, make an impression and capture some market share, it's just not that big. So if you're not coming out of the gate strong, you're significantly hindered. Now, again, I don't know if that's what happened with 40 Arpent and Araby. I don't want to be irresponsible and say anything, but one can certainly imagine a scenario with some of these breweries that it's tough sailing. And if you don't get it right, and you're not making enough money to basically be impervious to landlords and other considerations, you might find yourself a little bit in trouble. So anyway, unfortunately, they closed down, and I think this is sort of the landscape we're in. It's very much like the restaurant landscape here in New Orleans, where it can be somewhat of a problem because we have so many. And again, it becomes just that much more unforgiving. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the show. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk a little bit more about beer. Finally going to get to the stuff about talking about beer line cleaning and some other things. So hey, come on back.
Oregon wines are taking over New Orleans. The reason? They're delicious. Next time you're shopping for wine, grab a bottle of Sass Wine. Located in the South Salem Hills of Oregon's Willamette Valley, Sass Wine produces small amounts of handcrafted, high-quality wines that include Pinot Noir, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, and Rosé of Syrah. A perfect balance of full fruit with fine, supple tannins and firm acidity is what makes truly great wines, and you'll find that in every bottle of Sass Wine you drink.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in the Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petite Syrah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner, the Black Duck features over 120 rums as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Baggio heads up the Small Plates and Charcuterie Kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
Everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Hey, thanks for tuning into the show as always. Yes, hey, we're talking about beer. Yes, we are. One of my favorite subjects, of course, and all these kind of coincidences and confluences going on. NOLA on tap, as I mentioned, taking place, and some other considerations happening. We had the show last week, that was all about beer. Good stuff there. And so, hey, we're continuing this conversation. Now, one of the things that's also, and this has been an ongoing conversation in the beer world, is an article recently came out. There's a publication called Camra's Good Beer Guide, C-A-M-R-A apostrophe S, Good Beard Guide, excuse me. And the guy, that's what I'm trying to say, Roger Protz, who is the guy behind this, he's the editor and writer, or main writer for them. He says that big beer is fooling consumers into drinking craft. And there's a certain truth to this in that a lot of these craft breweries have been snapped up by big beers. Now, some of the big beer, you know, massive beer, we're not even talking medium size, we're talking the really big guys, okay? So InBev, which is In Beverage, AB InBev, so that was Anheuser-Busch merging with InBev, so on and so forth. We've talked a lot about that, go Google it. Have basically been buying a lot of these little guys, and they've been losing market share with their big brands, like Budweiser, okay? This is what we're talking about. So they've been snapping up little guys, and we've talked quite a bit about some of the problems with that, right? Maybe you're moving your tax base away from local environments. You might lose some jobs in some of these cases. You might even lose the quality of the beer. All these things, again, not going to go down that road, but that's kind of, you know, some of these concerns. But he says, you know, they're fooling people into thinking they're buying craft or drinking craft beer because basically that's what they're presenting, even though they own these brands. And some of the brands, London Fields was recently bought by Carlsberg, Lagunitas, great brewery in California, is bought by Heineken, Camden Town Brewery was bought by AB InBev, Goose Island, maybe one of the main ones we know here in this country, was bought by AB InBev a few years ago. Very recently, Anchor Steam, which we would call that a medium-sized brewery, was purchased by Sapporo in Japan. And one of the contentions here is, like, so for example, with AB InBev, and when they merged, they bought rival SAB Miller, also a huge conglomerate, for it was about 71 billion pounds sterling, a lot of money, don't ask me how much it is in dollars, effectively taking control of 30% of the world's beer production and sales. And we've talked quite a bit about that on the show. That's an astronomical number for one company, 30% 30% of the global sales. Now, they had to divest from certain holdings and things like that to achieve regulatory approval, in particular in Europe, but that's kind of the case. Now, here's part of the problem, though, and what I wanted to highlight here with this article in the Good Beer Guide is that he contends, Protz contends that thanks to the sort of low production costs and their buying power, in some cases, global brewers can afford to buy up global malt and hop supplies at 40% lower than even big and medium-sized breweries. Okay, think about that for a second, 40% lower. So what he contends is that they are trying to monopolize not only, you know, the beer market, but the raw materials required to make beer. He also goes on to point out that Carlsberg and Heineken were recently granted patents that cover two varieties of barley, along with a third patent that will allow the two varieties to be used together. So you start to starts to sound like Monsanto or something like that, where you're patenting these natural ingredients to use. And that seems to maybe, that could make for some really hard sledding here for independent breweries, wherever they may be, small guys, even medium guys, like we're talking about here. So this is something to pay attention to. There is an effort that is out there, and it's called a SIBA, I believe, Society of Independent Brewers. Yes, they're trying to set up an accreditation scheme that will actually label beers to let you know if they're actually truly independent and not owned by a large conglomerate. And I think this is based in the UK. Maybe it'll find its way here, but we'll try and keep tabs on that. So interesting times there in the beer world on that front. And we've talked quite a bit about this on the show before, and I don't want to get, we'll talk more about it in the future, but something to pay attention to, of course. Now, one of the things that I also wanted to talk about here was, here's a story that a U.S. man was awarded $750,000 after a beer tainted with caustic chemicals burned his internal organs and nearly killed him. And so this gentleman, Richard Washart, he is from New Jersey, I believe, was at a McCormick and Schmick's restaurant at Harrah's Casino in Atlantic City. This was all the way back in 2012, but the award of damages was recently given. And as I said, $750,000. And what happened was, is he took a swig of beer and it was tainted with a caustic agent that is used to clean the beer lines. And I'm going to talk about that in a second. Now, of course, McCormick and Schmick blamed its contractor called Kramer Beverage Company that cleans their lines, and the ruling was that they had to split the damages. And of course, McCormick and Schmick is appealing all of this, but this man apparently spent 6 days in the hospital, couldn't even drink water because his stomach is and his esophagus were burned internally. Does not sound particularly appetizing. Pretty rough, but it got me thinking a little bit about cleaning beer lines. And one of the things, I was talking about water, we talked about some of this stuff last week, is I've been to places where it's very clear that they have not cleaned their beer lines properly. So I want to do a little bit of research and share this with you and what is required. Now, beer lines, what I'm talking about here is, you know, oftentimes like we go to a tap room, right? And the kegs are somewhere in the back or underneath the counters, and these lines come up to the tap heads, and that's where the beer comes from. And sometimes these lines can be pretty long, a lot of beer going through. Of course, beer is a, you know, living, breathing product, if you will, to a degree. And so these things can get dirty and they can become tainted. Four of the main problems that you can get in a beer line are yeast, mold, something called beer stone, which is acid. And they're basically, it's like a mineral thing. So it's calcium oxalate deposits, and this can affect the taste of beer. And then of course, bacteria, which, you know, not harmful to us per se, but can really mess up the aroma and the taste. You get sort of sour taste or vinegar-like taste, rotten egg kind of thing going on. And it also, basically, it spoiled the beer. This is also very, very unpleasant. And I've been to places where the beers taste like this, and we maybe don't think about it very often, but you need to stay on top of cleaning your beer lines. And some of the guidelines recommended from the Brewers Association, Brewers Association, there you go, is that you need to do this every couple weeks, friends, every 2 weeks. And they say at minimum, you should clean your draft line every 2 weeks with an alkaline detergent cleaner to remove protein and films that build up quickly. The cleaning chemical should be recirculated through the product line for a minimum of 15 minutes. They're saying, you know, run it through. And if you can't recirculate, if you don't have the technology to do that, then you need to leave it in the line for at least 20 minutes. Probably something like that is what happened to the guy. They didn't properly flush the lines. Then all faucets need to be completely disassembled and cleaned every 2 weeks. And always want to make sure you're replacing damaged gaskets, seals, blah, 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 blah. Okay. Now these things, if you maintain these things, they're going to last a long time, but this is how you can potentially avoid these problems. That's a lot of work every 2 weeks. So as I mentioned, there's pressurized cleaning, recirculated cleaning. You have to have some technology and the right chemicals. Actually, an interesting thing too, another site from Micromatic, which is actually a vendor of wine on tap and beer tap systems, said that, you know, you either are going to need to use a caustic cleaner with a high pH, so meaning very basic, or an acidic with a very low pH, depending on the line conditions and the type of system you have and some of these things. Caustic cleaners attack and dissolve proteins, carbohydrates, hop resins, and biofilms. Also effective in killing mold, bacteria, and yeast. Acid line cleaners dissolve minerals that are commonly referred to as beer stones, so you might actually need to do both. So it's a lot of work, and it's costly. So these places, oftentimes, I just wanted to share this with you because I'm thinking, man, you're thinking, hey, man, I just plug, you know, like you did back in college, right? Tap the keg, run the keg. If you, you know, it's not that simple. You have to stay on top of this on a very regular basis, not only for the, you know, the taste of the beer, but just the preservation of your equipment is also very, very important in this situation. So any good beer house is going to have a regular program. I know there are a lot of contractors out there that do this for people, but something to think about and something to pay attention to. And that's sometimes, again, why I said when you go to these places that sometimes you'll have these sort of off-tasting beers, and you'll know that these places, or you can speculate pretty soundly, that these places haven't really done a great job keeping them clean. So maybe it's worth asking, hey, if you like beer and you go to a place and you're dropping a good pretty penny on tap beer for a craft beer that you want, ask them, hey, how often do you guys clean the lines? I find this all very, very interesting. Coming from a wine background, these things are also really important in that regard. We'll talk about that sometime down the road, but there you go, in the world of beer. So hey, what we're going to do now is we are going to run to our interviews that I talked about with our good pal Adrian Miller, joining me on our upcoming Two Dummies food tour that we're going to be embarking on here fairly soon in the very near future. Have a bit of a plan crystallizing. As I said, much of the plan almost seemed to like crystallize during the conversation, so I apologize for that. We're kind of brainstorming on the air, if you will. So that's a really fun conversation. We talk a bit about her background, some other things, some thoughts we're going to have with the Two Dummies food tour as it evolves. And then as soon as that's over, I'll be back to close out the show, talk about a few more events going on around town. So everybody, thanks for tuning in today. I appreciate it. We're gonna take a little break here on the show. Come on back.
Shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street. Or go to our website, drinklabnola.com.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in the Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region. Producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood. Or our bold, rich Petite Sirah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hi, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy, suggesting that great handcrafted Pinot Noir from Oregon doesn't need to be expensive. Consider Yamhill Valley Vineyard Estate Pinot Noir from the oldest family estate in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. It's rich, ripe, wonderfully balanced, and it's only about $20 at your favorite New Orleans wine shop. Yamhill Valley Vineyard. Top quality doesn't need to be expensive if you know what to drink. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
A bottle of whiskey. Night before last.
This is Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Yeah, hey, WDSO 990 AM in New Orleans or podcast land, wherever you may be. Are you in Japan? You're listening to the show. I love you. Thanks. And hey, there you go. We are chatting here. I am chatting. There's not really we. It's just me. And then my friend, Adrian Miller. And Adrian, how are you, pal?
I'm hanging in there by the skin of my teeth, but I'm hanging.
You're hanging.
You're hanging.
You're doing something new, and you're moving on. So there you go.
Fact.
It's exciting. And one of the new things, so you're doing a couple new things, sort of.
Yeah.
And this is the important one that we're going to talk about, because we got a thing, and it's called the Two Dummies Food Tour.
Seriously, every time you say that name, I die inside, and I'm just like, this is amazing.
You know what, because you're one of the favorite things, okay, one of my favorite character traits of you, I've known you for a number of years now, is you use the word dummy a lot. And it's like, I don't know very many people that like use the word dummy in such a loving way that you're the only one I really know. And so you started calling me dummy like 3 years ago. And I'm like, yeah, that's great. And then you and I talked about this idea. And we're going to get into this in a second about this food tour thing. And it kind of hit me. I'm like, Two Dummies Food Tour. I mean, could it really? I mean, how did this take us so long to come up with the name?
I don't know, but still... I guess I don't even know. I love that you just call it the Two Dummies Food Tour.
Dummies. It works.
It really does. And it really is good. It honestly is. Like, it just keeps me laughing every single time you say it. I have a smile on my face right now.
No, awesome. It's great. And I'm really excited about it because, we're kind of dummies. And so, not kind of, we're dummies. And so we're going to go around and we kind of have an idea. So, like, about once every 4 to 6 weeks, we're going to do a segment or segments on the show called, as you figured out, okay, I'm going to be really dumb here, dummy, Two Dummies Food Tour. But we're going to talk about, like, food and our love of food, and we're just going to go to places and eat and talk about it. It's pretty complex stuff, really.
Yeah, super complex.
Mm-hmm. So when we do this then, so, like, we're kind of talking about, like, okay, we're going to do some stuff where we're going to do stuff here around New Orleans, and, we're going to maybe, like, pick a theme. So it might be, like, a particular type of cuisine. Maybe it's Mexican food. I think we're going to do ice cream pretty quick and go hit some ice cream spots.
Yes.
And just kind of go and, kind of parachute in and order some food and eat it and talk about it. And then we're going to also get a little more ambitious down the road, and we're going to maybe do some traveling roadshow stuff.
No, we're traveling to Mobile. That is, like... It's going to happen. Right. I have to go to my hometown and show you all the food that I grew up on and, like, things that I'm obsessed with and loved and, like, have to have every time I go home.
Awesome. Well, let's talk about that. This is going to be two dummies food tour on tour.
Yes.
Which is even better. So it's like road trip, dummy road trip. So your hometown is Mobile, Alabama.
Yes.
Oh, and I know you've been on the show. And just so people, if you heard the show that you and I did together where we munched on some tacos and we were sitting in the Southern Food and Beverage Museum a couple months ago, right? Something like that. And we were kind of like, this is when this idea was kind of hatching and kind of, we were just sort of talking about it. But this is sort of crystallized into what it is that we're going to do. And I should probably say we're sitting here at Black Penny on Rampart with our good pal Katie Dubois over there. And this is where we're recording this. But so we're going to go, so we talked a little bit about your background and people know who you are because you've been on the show other times. But let's tell people, like, you grew up in Mobile. Who are you, Adrian Miller?
Oh, God.
This is your life.
Oh, what a terrible life. I grew up in Mobile, and I also grew up in the lovely state of New Mexico, which would be hilarious to fly you out to New Mexico and do a food tour out there.
We either need a sponsor or a budget, and I got neither.
If you pay for the plane ticket, I will definitely pay for everything else if we go to New Mexico.
Okay.
And then I'll take you to my grandmother's, which is ridiculous.
This is going to be Two Dummies Food Tour 2.0, because this is going to be, like, the second season. Right now, we're going to, like, drive around. We're going to go to Kennerbrough.
Yeah.
And we're going to go eat some stuff there. And then we're going to go have, like, ice cream.
I'm excited about Metairie, and more than anything. Like, you know how much I love Metairie and how...
You want to be a Metairie housewife.
I do want to be a Metairie housewife. I'm not going to lie about that. But I grew up in Mobile. There's some things that I definitely... Some of the best barbecue, I don't care what anybody says, is in Mobile. Rogers Barbecue, and then the place in Pritchard that I'll never know the name of until I actually see it. Hart's Chicken, Pullman's Bakery, definitely some huge staples in Mobile that every time I go back home, I have to have at least one of those things.
And you still have family in Mobile, right?
Yeah, I do. My grandmother and actually all of my dad's family, the black side of my family, is all in Mobile for the most part. All the Mexican side of my family is all in the Southwest, New Mexico, Arizona, California. Okay. So,
yeah, I didn't know that you had family in California too.
Yeah.
I knew the New Mexico part and the Arizona part, but okay. So like, and so we're going to do this and we're going to go around. So like when we do these ones where we go to Mobile or something, this will be a whole show or maybe even more than one show where we're going to go hit some of these establishments and we're, you know, like I said, it's not rocket science. We're going to sit down and eat and drink and talk about it, which is going to be really fun. And we're kind of dummies, so it's going to be even funnier. And then when we do stuff around here, it might be like not quite a whole show, but it's just kind of, I think the whole idea, Adrian, is like you and I like to eat. And we're just going to talk about what we like to eat and just kind of pick a theme and then go to these different places and hopefully like corral people that are running the places to come sit down and talk with us for a segment.
Yeah, definitely. And
talk about what they're doing. Yeah. And go ahead.
Yeah. I'm just saying yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
And the one other concept that we have too is that we're going to have at least every so often, we're going to have what we're going to call our guest dummy. And we're going to bring like a guest dummy or two along. Because we know a lot of other dummies, so...
I know so many dummies. I almost said a cuss word. No. I'm glad I stopped myself.
Good move. We're pre-recording, so we can actually beep it. But, I mean, dummy is such a good word because it can actually... Friends, you interpret what we're talking about here by saying dummy.
I guess when I say dummy, it's a friend. It's a term of endearment. If I call you a dummy, I like you. And I don't like a lot of people, so... If I call you a dummy... It's because I like you.
It is. It's a term of endearment, and you're a dummy.
Anytime I see somebody say dummy on Facebook, I'm like, that happened because of me.
It totally happened because of you, actually. And that's what I was saying at the beginning. You're like the only person that I know that like it's a regular part of your vernacular all the time is dummy. And I think it's great because it's actually one of my favorite words. It totally makes me laugh all the time.
It's a good word.
It's a great word. It's a totally good word. It's applicable. It can actually kind of take on different levels of meaning. But this, in our case here, it's just going to be us going out and eating. And, you know, you and I, like, we like to eat. We know a pretty good amount about food. Certain types, like, you know, tons about Mexican food from the Mexican side of your family, like you're talking about. Tons about stuff like, you know, growing up in Mobile, like soul food. We were talking about that before we went on the air. But, you know, neither you or I are, we're not like chefs. We didn't go to culinary school.
So I went to culinary school, actually.
Oh, you did? I forgot about that. That's right. I'm sorry.
But that doesn't mean that I'm anything. They're legit. Like the other day, I was at a friend's house and I made some mole rice and I've literally been freaking out about it for the last 2 days because I know I could have made it better than I did. And that's how, like, weird my brain thinks, where I'm like, I did this and then I'm just like, shut up, just they ate it, so it was okay, whatever.
Roulé with a mole.
It's
all good, you know. And one of the things I think is kind of neat and how, like, we're going to do this too and what we're going to talk about is, you know, I think especially if you're listening to the podcast and you're not from New Orleans or you don't live in New Orleans, you know, you might kind of think, okay, New Orleans, it's like Cajun food, which is really not New Orleans. Or you might think Italian food, but Creole Italian food, which is very New Orleans. But so we're going to talk about stuff like that, but we're also going to go hit up things that maybe you don't know. And even if you live in New Orleans, you might not think about, one of our favorite subjects is Mexican food, because I grew up in California.
Yeah.
And, you know, grew up around it and good versions of it in many cases. And, you know, like the scene here is interesting. It's limited. It's good on some levels and limited on other levels. And, you know, so it's like we're going to go kind of explore some of this. And here's the good stuff that you can find and probably discuss a little bit about, like, maybe what's missing and we hope is coming.
Yeah, I feel like definitely what's missing would be a huge thing, because I think a lot of people in the South equate things, Mexican food, to Tex-Mex, which is a completely different beast.
Absolutely.
Of its own. And I feel like if, from a Mexican point of view, being myself and then like other people who are from here or have moved down here that are Mexican and like showing their like, no, this is what it really is and this is what it is. And it, you know, there are different versions of it from every state in Mexico,
it's
you
a
know,
huge
like
place, right? Well, Adrian, do me a favor. Hold the thought because I want to take a little break here. And then we're going to come back and we're going to talk more about Mexican food and more about the two dummies food tour. Sound good?
Heard.
Right on. Friends, come on back to the Nola Drink Show. The wild chat with two coolers. Wild wench is showing nation. Wild, wild creation. We don't buy down on nobody's ground. But I will love to hear them call us. Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best-kept secrets in wine today, Miro Cellars.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Goodbye, Joe. I got all right, everybody, welcome back to the Nola Drink Show. Hey, Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning in today. And hey, if you just came back from the commercial break, either on the podcast or the radio show, that was probably about 3 or 4 minutes in our real life as we're taping the show here at Black Penny on a Monday afternoon, 3 days before you're listening to the radio, or Friday thereafter for podcast. This was about a 20-minute break between segments. So the two dummies are going to apologize for not remembering exactly what the hell it was that we were talking about, Adrian.
I'm just going to start talking about mole right now.
Okay, because we were talking about Mexican food.
We were talking about Mexican food. And I said that how in every different state, there's different, like any region of every state of Mexico that you go to, there's a different.
That's what we were talking about. You nailed it. Way to go.
Yeah, there's a different cuisine and like specific thing that they make. And I was going to talk about how no matter where you go in Mexico, there will always be mole.
Thank you for saving the segment, because that's what we were talking about, was the regional. Like, people think, like, Mexican food, and you were talking about Tex-Mex and how people think, like, that's Mexican food. Mexico is a huge country, and so the variations in cuisine, it's like anywhere.
Yeah.
It's a huge variation throughout the country.
But every region has a mole, whether it's mole verde, mole rojo, but and also too, every family has their own recipe. So you have, like,
can you tell people what mole is, just so
mole,
if you don't know?
Basically, what it boils down to is mole is a savory chocolate sauce, and it has three things in it that are main. The main three ingredients are chocolate, nuts, and chili.
Right.
And then you have another version of mole, which is called pepian, which not a lot of people know about. That's actually my favorite thing. Pepian is the same thing, and you have mole rojo, or sorry, pepian rojo or pepian verde. And that's the same thing, but their main base of it is with pumpkin seeds.
Right. Okay.
It's so delicious. Actually, we had some. I was out hanging out with one of our other bartender friends, Maggie, and Katie the other day, and we were at Carmo, which is
Cafe Carmo on Julia Street.
On Julia, yep. Which is phenomenal. I love Dana and his wife. They're
Dana's a good
so
guy.
Amazing. Their food is stupid.
Yep.
They had mole verde. And I was just—it was so good. Maggie got it.
Well, so we're talking about our good pal Maggie Morgan, who works at Mo Bar and Cane and Table, and then Katie Dubois, who's here at Black Penny. But so like Mullet, let's use that as a really good example, because Adrian, one of the things that we wanted to talk about here, so we're talking about diversity of cuisine and something like Mexico that we tend to generalize in the United States, and in New Orleans we certainly do that. What Mexican food is or is not, perhaps.
It's three things for everybody that identifies with Mexican food: tacos, burritos, and nachos.
Yeah, right. There you go. Exactly.
Which nachos are not Mexican. They're actually Tex-Mex.
They are Tex-Mex. And that's a whole, like you were saying before, that's a whole different thing. And and not Corona either. But we're not going to go down that road. Here in New Orleans, for example, we have, like, this is what we want to do, I think, on the Two Dummies food tour here a little bit, is, look, New Orleans is a great culinary city. We know that. So when it comes to traditional New Orleans foods, like Creole Italian, the adapted French cuisine that we have here, for example, frankly, what is kind of more often than not adapted Cajun cuisine, somewhat traditional sometimes, not necessarily always, there are a lot of things that we don't have here. And so, like, Mexican food, it's represented on certain levels, but, like, mole, I think, serves as a really good talking point, because it's not like you go and, like, you can go get these different types of mole for that are representative of different regions very commonly. We don't have the breadth of Mexican food in New Orleans that you might find, obviously, in Mexico, that goes without speaking, but, like, you know, like you'd find in, say, California or even New York, for that matter.
Yeah. I would love for people to open their minds up about stirring away from, like, everybody loves tacos. Like, I made tacos every day for a week these last few, you know. Another thing people identify with is tamales, and there's different types of tamales
all throughout Central America.
Yeah.
Different, and they vary
Mexican
country by country.
Mexican tamales are the best, though. I'm just going to say that right now.
There's some really, but you know, and like even within Mexico, there's a range of variation in what you use.
Complete,
and like,
yeah.
My lovely wife, Sylvia, you know, half of her family's from Nicaragua, and Nicaraguan tamales are really, really good. They're different. They're Nagat tamales, and there's a huge variation there too.
And I just think that doing this whole endeavor that we're on is just opening people's eyes to, like, you may have your mindset on one thing, but it's actually like it's just the tip of the iceberg, as I could best put it.
Yeah, I think that's really good. And I think, you know, an important point too, Adrian, is that I think in this sort of day and age, and New Orleans is certainly every bit this as many other places are, you know, everybody like their listicles, top 10 places to go do this now, or top 10 this in town, or top 10 that in town. And like, and some of the things we've talked about on the show before, talking about the restaurant industry, you know, lots of times when you're in some of these listicle sites, I guess I won't name names, we all know who you are, is, you know, you're like you're in a list if you open or you close, or maybe you do something different. And, you know, like, there's something to me to be said for, I say this all the time on the show, there's something to be said for, like, consistently doing something really well, or doing something that's maybe under the radar, that's maybe not flashy, but it's, like, say, traditional cuisine that's here, that's from wherever it's brought from, that's executed really well. So maybe that's actually not sexy, but it's awesome. And that's the type of stuff that I think we want to kind of, you know, find, right?
Completely. You know, Thomas Keller, what he's famous for. At the restaurant at, what is it? Something Basket? I don't know what the name of the restaurant is. But the main dish that they cook is roasted vegetables and chicken. That's okay, what he does.
Right. Yeah, right.
And he does it phenomenally well. You know, and that's the thing that I think that we're both going to discover at this is, you know, people doing things that we look at every day that we wouldn't be like super amped about, but they do them really well.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so, I couldn't agree more. And actually, you know, bringing some perspective to that of what it means. And I think, like, and I don't want to be negative, and I know people, we can be somewhat strident here in New Orleans about, you know, it's one of the great culinary cities in the world. There's no doubt about that. And so, sure, we're going to go talk about some of the traditional stuff here that's done really, really well. And, you know, look, I think there's something to be said for, like, I always say this all the time, if I go to a particular place and I order a Sazerac and it's made well and my steak is cooked to order and it's killer, I'm stoked. And there's no listicle for that, but that needs to be talked about. And then finding these things that we need to, like, go over or turn over, excuse me, and find, right, that are maybe different or done well. Like, we're talking about doing one, we'll do one on Caribbean food. Well, what does that mean? How does that vary? It's a huge variation.
Yeah. There's different... I was reading today, and it's called the French Laundry. Haha.
Oh, French. Thank you. Yes, thank you. I totally spaced the same thing.
I was like, Basket.
That's it. That's it.
You know, every island in the Caribbean has a different type of food. It's not all just jerk chicken and plantains and, like, breadfruit. You know, it's right. not all this. It's not the same thing.
There's like overlaps of they're spice palette and flavor palette, but completely. They're not all the same. They're not very, all the very same. Different.
And I was reading today on one of the websites. There's a lady off of St. Claude at Haynes Market, and she's from Trinidad.
Which is very particular.
Yeah. And she was like, yeah, a lot of people like freak out, but they see like jerk chicken and that's something they can identify themselves with. And she's like, jerk chicken is not Trinidadian? If that's sure. Yes, I think that's what sure. they're called, Trinidadian.
That works for me. Toboggan, which is you ride down a hill in snow. That's terrible.
But she was like, she was like saying like that's something that I know people can identify themselves with, and they get comfortable with, like, they know I make really amazing jerk chicken, and then they go off the jerk chicken and try her other things like curried goat. I don't know if you've ever had Caribbean curried goat. That's one of the most phenomenal dishes I've ever had in my life.
Super Eastern Caribbean,
it's
totally
so good.
Absolutely.
And I had the first time I ever had that when I was in college in Huntsville, Alabama, and I was driving by this like little Caribbean place. Went in. I never had goat before. Ate it and was like, bruh, seriously? Yeah,
absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. And so I think this is really cool, because what we're talking about here then is that we have some of these things, but a lot of these things are sort of generalized. And I think when we get outside of the, for lack of a better way to put it, some of the new, quote unquote, New Orleans genres of food, this is where we become very generalized.
Yeah.
And so finding some of these places which are out there that are actually somewhat specific to something, maybe a bit more authentic or, you know, regionally specific, is what we're going to look to do. Well, Adrian, let's do one more segment. You got some time?
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. Friends, right. We're going to take a little break here on the show. Come on back.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. It's football and festival season, and there's no better way to enjoy Sazerac Rye than in a pothole cocktail. Just fill up a glass with ice and your favorite root beer, and add 2 ounces of Sazerac Rye for a truly tasty toddy. Named after the city's most iconic of inconveniences, the pothole is proof that New Orleans never takes itself too seriously. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc, a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint. And it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose, Coquille Blanc. Cheers!
The French Market is a place where history is made fresh daily. From the historic Upper Pontalba building on Jackson Square to the ever-evolving Farmers Market, our six-block district celebrates New Orleans food, music, and culture through events, festivals, walking tours, health and fitness classes, and also children's workshops at the New Orleans Jazz Park. Visit our calendar of events at www.frenchmarket.org. The French Market, making history fun since 1791.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
With the season's beautiful weather, it's a perfect time to take a drive across Lake Pontchartrain and visit New Orleans' only local vineyard and winery, Pontchartrain Vineyards. Our tasting room is open Wednesday through Sunday from noon till 4, or by appointment. Come enjoy a flight of our wines in our classically styled French Provençal tasting room, or pack a picnic lunch and enjoy a bottle of wine on our patio overlooking the vineyard. While you're there, ask about our wine club. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
Get in the groove and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till it's through our soul.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Noah Drinks Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Yeah. And we're talking about the Two Dummies food tour with my good pal, Adrian Miller. And I'm going to, you know, Adrian, what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to sort of apologize to our listeners in a weird way, in that, you know, like, we've been hatching this for a while. It's been stewing, no pun intended. It's been macerating, again, no pun intended. I'm going to stop with that. And, you know, but it's kind of like developing. The conversation is really developing as we talk here, sitting at the Black Penny. Well, and I'm also two old fashions in. You're drinking water. But, yeah, we're kind of like, here, yeah, the concept's coming along.
You know, I don't need any alcohol to be a dummy.
Fair enough.
Or to get, if I can say the word, assy.
Sure, you can say that. You can okay. say that word. All right, yes. Then.
You know, it doesn't take much to make me a get assy, so it's fine.
Hey, beautiful. And so here we go. We're developing the Two Dummies food concept here live, even though it's pre-recorded. As we, you figure that out, how
it's
that works.
It's live to us.
It's live to us right now as we go. Well done. And we were talking about before we went on the break, which I think is going to be really fun, is that sort of looking for these things. So we're talking about maybe generalizations of food that are out there. You know, we're going to be specific to New Orleans until we kind of do some of the road trip stuff. You know, one of the things that you know that I want to talk about, I think a lot of people think, like, for example, Cajun food. People, if you're not, and a lot of people I know, and you know, all of our good friends listening to the podcast, I really appreciate it. You might think like Cajun and New Orleans are the same thing. Cajun and New Orleans are not the same thing. Different parts of Acadiana, different parts of, you know, Cajun country, if you will, where people come from, also have very different styles. Emphasis on seafood, closer to the water, more on, like, you know, boucherie and livestock further up, all kinds of other considerations. And so that's some stuff that we want to do, too. We want to go out to Lafayette, the heart of Cajun country, and talk about some of those differences, because it's sort of like we were talking about with Mexico. There's a huge variation within Cajun country and Acadiana of what Cajun food is. And then as it's brought to New Orleans, there are certain examples of where it's influenced traditional New Orleans food. There are certain examples where people are doing Cajun stuff in New Orleans. But Cajun and New Orleans are not the same thing.
Correct. That's all I have to say.
Very good. Okay.
Sorry. I got excited because I was, like, thinking about going to Lafayette and, like, not only eating really dope Cajun food, but also eating, like, all the Blue Plate specials possible.
Yeah, and that's a good thing to go do. And actually, one thing that you did recently, which I'm totally envious of, the very single last ever anywhere in the world Popeye's Fried Chicken Buffet.
That Popeye's
is the one
buffet
in Lafayette.
Was so... Seriously, I ate all the Cajun rice. Or dirty rice, whatever.
Dirty rice, yeah.
It was called spicy rice when I was growing up. That's what it was called, and that's how I always remember it. And even still to this day, when I order the rice at Popeye's, I'm like, can I get the spicy rice? And they're like, you mean the Cajun? I'm like, no, it's spicy rice.
It's spicy rice. And yeah, you know what? And that's a really good one, too. Like, you know, everybody's family, if you, you know, and dirty rice, like, the reason why it's called dirty rice, it's kind of dirty business, right? You're dealing with certain parts of the animal,
yeah,
that those of us
it's
who
all the buy, dirty bits.
It's all the dirty bits.
It's and just it, bits and pieces.
Exactly.
Scraps of meat.
Precisely, and done in rice and certain spices and things like that. And everybody's sort of family, if you even kind of tackle that, have a different variation on the theme. And I mean, you certainly find it in New Orleans, and it's pretty common in New Orleans, but, like, what animals are used, what parts of the animals are used, vary, vary by region, vary by family, vary by anything.
I'm just excited about Blue Plates.
So let's go back to the Blue Plates. So we're going to go to...
I'm sorry.
No, go for it.
I'm just thinking about meatloaf and mashed potatoes. Like, everybody that knows me really well knows how much I, like, love meatloaf. And when I worked at Tube South... me and one of the other managers had gotten in a fight, and I left because I was going home, and she sent me a picture of they had meatloaf and mashed potatoes. I'm not even kidding you, stopped in the middle of the road because I was so pissed. And I text our sous chef, Jason, and was like, did you make meatloaf and mashed potatoes? If you did, I will kill you. And he texts back, not even kidding, 2 seconds later, and he was like, no, Loey made it. Because he knows how I feel about meatloaf and mashed potatoes. But, like, I mean, actually, you know, and I think that's another thing, too. Like, most people have, like, a certain generalization. Like, it is about blue plate specials. But I feel like every place, especially, like, in the South, does it differently, whether if it's right. The same, like, their meatloaf recipe is different. You can go to two different places and have two different types of meatloaf.
Absolutely. That varies, like, you know, and then we have a version Crescent City meatloaf here in New Orleans.
Yeah.
A lot of people, but even the variation in that, like, you know, my Sylvia, my wife, you know, grew up here. How her family makes Crescent City meatloaf is not the same way that other people make Crescent City meatloaf.
And I love that, stepping away from that idea of just, like, even though these are blue paste specials, they're done differently and very well.
Yeah.
And they may be $8.99, but that $8.99 is going to go a long damn way, and it's going to make you full as hell.
At 4:30 in the afternoon.
You're going to get the itis real bad.
Right. And that's going to be really a lot of fun. So we're going to do a lot of this kind of stuff with this. And I think looking at some of the challenges are going to be like, how do we kind of keep this, unlike what we're doing here today, which we're not doing well, keeping this sort of scoped in on, okay, you know, because we want to, like, pick a theme, and we want to make sure that this actually works. And so we're going to kind of push through and do different things where we're going to pick a geographic location. So
yeah. Well,
let's talk about this for a second, because we got about 3-4 minutes. So Kenner, we've mentioned this a couple times. So if you're not from this area, Kenner is a city that's a suburb of New Orleans. It's two towns to the west of New Orleans. It's where the airport is. And that's the best accent I could do. And Kennebra. And what's kind of gone on in the past few years in Kenner is that there has been a sort of blossoming of all kinds of more authentic, legitimate ethnic food going on and non-traditional New Orleans stuff.
Yeah.
And because that stuff's not really... It's been harder to find in the city limits of New Orleans, frankly. This is where we have populations, because people are moving from these countries and they can't afford to live in New Orleans, or that's where some folks...
Yeah, so they go to Metairie, they go to Kenner.
Yep, and so that's where...
Or they're on the West Bank.
Or they're on the West Bank, which is another thing. We're going to go do the flea market there, which is going to be a whole special... We can't talk about that, because that... We don't have enough time. We're going to go do the flea market in Algiers, which is awesome. But like out in Kenner, you know, lots of good traditional Mexican food... pretty good Chinese food. There's some Brazilian stuff going on out there. There's some Caribbean stuff going on out there.
Yeah.
Some Indian stuff going on out there, which we don't have a whole lot of. Look, we do New Orleans stuff really good, and we do Vietnamese stuff really good, because we've always had a solid Vietnamese, in recent decades, a solid Vietnamese population. So Vietnamese food here is spot on. But we're starting to see this other stuff. So Kenner is actually becoming this hotbed, if you will. And you're hearing me say, if you're from New Orleans, you're going, dude, what? But if you're not from New Orleans, it's probably not making you freak out. But, like, there's going to be all kinds of killer stuff out in Kenner that we're going to go check out. I'm super excited about
that. But I feel like even if you're the people that aren't from New Orleans and they're listening to this show can step away. And, you know, I've had guests come in and they're like, where should we eat in New Orleans? Like, what's your favorite spot? And you know me, I don't give up. I refuse to give up my secret spots unless you're, like, really close with me. And if you're a tourist, no offense to you guys, but I don't want you blowing up my spot.
right.
But I feel like if you're listening to this, like you can explore outside of New Orleans, because there's really phenomenal food outside of New Orleans as well. Like, you know, I love food in Metairie. I can't think of anything in the spot. Like, oh, actually, the kosher Cajun in Metairie.
Oh, yeah. The
so
Jewish
good.
Deli.
Oh,
yeah,
my God.
Sure. Absolutely.
I'm trying to think. There was another place, the Brazilian place that my brother went to that was in Kenner.
There's two, right?
Yeah.
There's a Fogo out there, and I think there's a cafe out there that also.
I think so.
Yeah, I think there's two spots.
He really loved it. But I think this also gives up people who aren't from New Orleans an opportunity to realize we're not just about Cajun food, you know? We're not just, like, about, like, this deep Southern dishes. We are, but there's also, like, an expansion of that. So I feel like if you're listening to the show... You can take these suggestions that we're giving and these places that we're about to eat.
Yep. And check it out.
For
sure.
Like, yeah.
You know, we like to say here that we're the north, you know, which is true. We're the northernmost city of the Caribbean. And we really are. And what a lot of the Caribbean has always represented is a lot of crossroads. And so we're seeing the development, I think, further, which it should be. It's always an ongoing conversation about what the development of these crossroads are. And we're going to go turn some of that up.
Yeah.
How's that?
Sounds
good.
Does
that sound good? All right. Well, and the timing of all this is perfect as we end on a waxing philosophical note. Hey, friends, we're going to we'll be back a little bit more of the Nola Drink Show. Adrian, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, pal.
Always
looking
a pleasure.
Forward to this. And stay tuned. The Two Dummies Food Tour. Here we come. Friends, come
Dummies
on back.
Dummies for life.
Dummies for life. Come on back.
It was rocking. You never see such scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn. Now my buddy and me was on the main stem, fooling around just me and him. We decided we could use a little something to eat.
Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine. Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
Hi, New Orleans. It's Laura from Sobu, and I'm here with Chef Juan Carlos.
Sobu's got happier hour. It's 3 to 6 from 3 to 6.
It's bar bars, sips, and snacks, all for $3 to $6 from 3 to 6 p.m. every day.
Laura's got something to please everyone at the bar for happier hour, all for 3 to 6 here at Sobu.
And we know you'll want to try a smoky pulled pork taco or any of the other delicious snacks on our happier hour menu.
Sobu's happier hour every day from 3 to 6, 310 Charter Street in the quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner, the Black Duck features over 120 rums as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Bageau heads up the small plates and charcuterie kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Thanks for tuning in today. Brian D is here with you. Hope everybody has a great weekend. I appreciate you listening in as always. Hope you enjoyed the conversations we had today, some of our thoughts and news there on restaurants, beer, all that good stuff. Hope you enjoyed the chat with Trevor Schneider from Reka Vodka. Cool guy. I enjoyed hanging out with him a bit here and there during Tales of the Cocktail. Of course, thanks to my good pal, Adrian Miller, who we're starting the Two Dummies Food Tour. Stay tuned for that. That's going to be a lot of fun. Looking forward to going out to Kenner and killing some food. Going to crush some stuff. There you go. That's going to be a lot of fun. And so I mentioned next week, I'll touch on that now one more time here, is that we're going to be chatting with, I think, a couple things. If this all pans out, we're going to chat with the distiller from the new, relatively new distillery in New Orleans, 7-3 Distilling. And then we're going to chat with at least Tyler Chauvin and Cole Newton. Cole is the proprietor of 12 Mile Limit, and Tyler Chauvin runs the bar Treo on Tulane Avenue. And we're going to talk about the fundraising efforts to help service industry members in Houston and that area in the wake of Hurricane Harvey. And again, we'll get into some other aspects of Hurricane Irma, Maria, probably the two unfortunate earthquakes in Mexico. Not really good times these days for natural disasters, but that'll be an important conversation. I hope you stay tuned. One thing I wanted to add to that conversation, while obviously it's important, we mentioned this long recovery process that we're very familiar with here in the New Orleans area. Many of you listeners, wherever you are, probably are too, and I hope not directly, but it's not fun. But this is where we kind of get into that part where people really need support for the long haul, and why hospitality service industry members really important, of course, because their livelihoods depend on tips and income that comes in when people are patronizing, of course, their establishments. And if they've been damaged, ruined, you've got huge personal expenses, perhaps where you're not able to afford these things, all this kind of stuff. It can be slow in coming back in some instances for people in the service industry to be able to get back on their feet. It's slow for everybody, but another example. So please tune in next week for that. Wanted to mention again, I was talking about some events going on. Of course, I mentioned NOLA on Tap taking place this Saturday, September 23rd at City Park, all afternoon and early evening. Check out nolaontap.org for more information on that. The Fried Chicken Festival, second time, it's back. and it's going to be held here at Waldenburg Park, right there along the Mississippi River, right there in the French Quarter, more or less. And yeah, it's going to be all kinds of food, music, family, fun, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's an interesting festival. I mean, we have a festival for everything now these days here in New Orleans, it seems like, and that's fine. And fried chicken's an integral part of things that we like to, I know I like to eat. I'm just going to say it that way. But last year, if you're familiar, if you went, I actually didn't go, but I got lots of reports. I'm kind of glad that I didn't go because it was a complete disaster. Now, obviously, first year festival, these things can kind of happen. But what ended up happening was that they ran out of food very, very quickly. The turnout was many fold more than what they actually expected. So these poor vendors got overrun. They ran out of food. Lines are really long. People were unhappy. Some people waited in line for a really long time to get some fried chicken and ended up getting nothing. My understanding was is they were only permitted, and I believe this is true, only permitted to have one large fryer. And I believe now they're going to have a little bit more capacity, industrial fryer kind of thing. They're going to have more of those to allow people to be able to serve more food more quickly. And that should be a good thing. So let's give them another shot there at the Fried Chicken Festival. That's going on 2 days, both Saturday and Sunday. As I mentioned, it's free at Waldenburg Park, right there along the Mississippi River. Some of the vendors include Bayou Hot Wings, Dat Dog, Dunbar's, Willie Mays, Scotch House, of course, the very famous Willie Mays, and Original Fiorella's Cafe, which I'm excited about. Had an opportunity, I'm going to mention that too, with the Original Fiorella's Cafe. That place was originally opened on Decatur Street, Lower Decatur, dang near the Mint. There you go, U.S. Mint building or the museum now. They changed hands, I believe, twice. So the family, the original family, sold out to somebody a few years back, and then somebody else bought it. And then somewhat recently, within the past several months, it actually burned down. There was a fire in the kitchen, I guess. And so that is now gone. But the family then, actually the original Fiorella's family, reopened with their own recipes and their own operation. And they moved to Gentilly. It's on Franklin. And it's great. I went there with my wife not too long ago and had, of course, fried chicken. And they do a lot of the New Orleans and Southeast Louisiana kind of standards, you know, good red beans and rice, these sorts of things. And the food was great. The fried chicken was just, you know, beyond reproach. So go check them out. And the people in there are super nice too. So it's a cool place. Excited to see them out there at the Fried Chicken Festival. Music's going to include Big Frida, Naughty Professor. They're awesome. So it's Big Frida, of course. Big Sam's Funky Nation. Awesome. Sean Arduin and Zyda Cool. Awesome. And Los Poboycitos. Personal favorites of mine, friends of mine. Love those guys. So there's a lot more. There's a cooking demo thing going on. There's going to be more entertainment going on. There's a lot of stuff going on. So if you are interested in that, you can always just check out neworleansonline.com. And do they have a web? I'm sure they have a website. Yes, it's just friedchickenfestival.com. So there you go. Friedchickenfestival.com. Check that out. Here's another event that you might also be interested in. Where'd you go? Here you are. We've had a lot of talk about Storyville lately. Let me back up. So Storyville, if you're not familiar with it, either if you're here in New Orleans or you're listening from afar, it was the red light district here in New Orleans, and it existed basically from 1897, to 1917. I'm not going to go too far down the road of all the history and all of this, but it was basically a district there. And the reason why it's called Storyville is there was an alderman, essentially like a city council, and his last name was Story. And he actually advocated, his name was Sidney Story, to be technically correct. And he advocated that, you know, we kind of, even though prostitution was essentially illegal in the state or in the city, that we, you know, still happened, right? So we create this district called Storyville. We put it there in a particular area that's kind of in, well, it's basically the streets are, it's bounded by North Robertson, Iberville, Basin, and St. Louis streets. It's now gone. It's been knocked down. Most of the original buildings were wiped out in the 30s to build the Iberville housing project stuff, but it was a way to kind of regulate things. And what went on, again, kind of skipping very quickly, but this was a place where, yes, there were brothels, but a lot of the brothels, of course, there were, you know, places to go eat. There was a lot of music. This is where I believe the term fest, short for professor, for piano players comes from. You had these masterful piano players that played in Storyville. I believe Louis Armstrong played in Storyville. Certainly Buddy Bolden did, Jelly Roll Morton did, Pops Foster did, some of these very famous people. And, you know, why it's kind of, we're talking about it a little bit more. It's technically in the neighborhood of the Faubourg Treme, if you really want to know. But why we're talking about more is a lot more research is starting to come out about Storyville, and there were these famous things called the Blue Book. It was almost like a guidebook for tourists and other folks. You could purchase these things for like nothing, like, well, 25 cents was actually pretty expensive back then, and it had, was the listing of all the prostitutes. So the Historic New Orleans Collection, our friends there, their main area or office and display areas on Royal Street, but they have an extensive large collection center that also has some exhibit areas. It's the Williams Research Center. That's at 410 Chartist Street. And they have a lot of this stuff. They actually have been showing some of the blue books. There was a recent exhibit on that. And what they're doing is they have a new exhibit that is on now, and it's going to run for a little while. It's called Storyville, Madams and Music. And that's going to be really fun because, as we've talked, it's going to run till, let's see, pretty much through the beginning of December. It ends December 2nd. So, yeah, go check that out. It's $10 to get in, again, 410 Chartist Street. But, you know, Madams and Music. So we're going to talk about some of the characters behind this. And music, of course, was very important, as I mentioned. And again, skipping a lot of the story, but it was a kind of an area where both white and black musicians somewhat probably interacted or at least heard each other to a degree. And so this is really, it had a huge influence on jazz music and the development of jazz music. Now, some might actually say that's where jazz music was actually invented. That's probably a bit of a stretch, but it's certainly a significant part of its development, and a huge influence was felt in Storyville. And then Storyville was basically closed, as I said, in 1917, and it had to do with the military and keeping prostitution away from military bases. So it was really more of a federal thing that went on. But anyway, so check that out, Storyville, Madams and Music, at the Historic New Orleans Collection. Again, it's not on their Royal Street property or building there. It's at the 410 Chartist Street building. It pretty much goes on throughout the day. It's free for members of the Historic Collection, and it's $10 for members of the public, so that should be pretty fun. Friends, again, I really appreciate you tuning into the show today. As always, we'll be back next week. I've already talked quite a bit about that, so I'm not going to go down that road any further. Maybe see you at the Fried Chicken Festival. Maybe see you at NOLA on Tap. Something along those lines. Hope to come up, say hi, and check us out. NOLADrinks.com, NOLADrinks on Facebook, NOLADrinks on Instagram, and NOLADrinks1 on Twitter. Yeah, because somebody had NOLADrinks already on Twitter. I don't know who. Anyway, appreciate you tuning in, everybody. Have a great weekend. Take care of yourself. Be kind to each other. And until then, cheers, y'all.